Good afternoon. The time is now 1:42, and I'd like to call this meeting in the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order. We're in Belts, Room 105 of the Thomas Stewart Building here in the nation's most beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Friday, March 1st. It's cold for March 2024. Members present, Senator Merrick is joining us on the phone. Senator Bishop is excused today. Senator Gray Jackson is here. Senator Dunbar is here. And myself, Senator Bjorkman, is also here. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I'd like to recognize and welcome our recording secretary, Lisa Denny, and our LIO moderator, Joseph Giesbrecht. Today, we have two items on our agenda. Senate Bill 173, Authorized Handguns, School Employee/Volunteer, and Senate Bill 211, Agricultural Products, Loans, and Sales. First up, we have Senate Bill 173. We first heard this bill on January 24th when we had a presentation of the bill and took invited testimony as well as public testimony. With us today, we have bill sponsor, the Honorable Senator Shelley Hughes, and her staff, Stephen Knaus, to give a brief recap of the bill and answer any questions that may have come up since our last hearing. If Senator Hughes and Stephen would just like to come up to the table to provide a brief recap, that would be most excellent.
Thank you very much, Chair Bjorkman and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. I'm honored to come before you with my staff, Stephen Knaus, and recap for you at Senate Bill 173, the Safe Schools Act, which provides the back-end stopgap in the event of a shooter, an active shooter, getting through what I know our schools work hard to prevent. The hardening of the schools and those preventive measures at the front end, noting mental health issues and things like that, and trying to get help for people. But unfortunately, shooters have gotten throughout our nation. This bill was brought to me by a progressive retired teacher, Stephen O'Brien, who was in Bethel in 1997 during the school shooting there, and after the Oxford High shooting in Michigan. And, of course, watching all the other news stories, he was very concerned to me and came to me with this proposal that is working and active in other states to deter shooters from entering school grounds. And I might note that we have data that shows that more school shooters are stopped by armed personnel on school properties than by law enforcement. And that is because law enforcement just simply cannot get there quickly enough. I certainly wish they could, but they just can't. In our state, it's an even worse problem. We have areas on the road system where the troopers say they cannot get there in less than an hour. And then, of course, we have villages that don't have armed law enforcement. 85% I think, of our communities are off the road system, and it could be several hours or up to 5 days. It's been as long as the troopers have taken to get out to a community because of inclement weather. So this is a precautionary measure that will save lives of students and save lives of teachers. And I know there are naysayers, and I understand that, but one of the things I want to thank all those who've stepped up. Everything is not uploaded yet to BASIS, but we downloaded signers supporting the bill at 228. And more have come in since we downloaded that. There are also 56 support letters that are not yet uploaded to BASIS that we have counted. And so we're running about, I think, about 50 against to 304 from our rough count, because I think we all love our children and we all want to protect staff. And so I think this policy is, as much as people are concerned about guns, and I understand that, one of the things I've heard, Mr. Chairman, is that the risk of an accidental discharge, or what we call an ND, a negligent discharge, doesn't happen in these settings because of the high training and the fact that the handgun is kept concealed on the well-vetted and trained personnel's body. It's not left in a desk drawer. It's not put on a shelf or in a closet. It is on their body at all times. So you don't have that problem. Actually, the only way that gun will go off is if a finger pulls that trigger, and that's not an accident. So that is not a reason not to do this. Also, I want to say, as much as I would love, and probably all of us would love, to have multiple school resource officers at every single school, that is not feasible. So that can't be the answer. We don't have enough law enforcement nationally in the pipeline, let alone school resource officers. We just don't. I'm not sure how many Anchorage has, but we only have 5 in my district in the Mat-Su Borough, and we have 48 or 49 school buildings. So bless the hearts of those school resource officers. They're great, and they're covering multiple schools, but we can't guarantee that they will be on site. And the only thing that will save a child if a gunman's pointing a gun at them is someone on site who can immediately respond. And so to me, this is not a left or right issue. It is not a pro-gun, anti-gun issue, because every person that I have spoken with who is generally anti-gun, when I ask this very basic question, let's say you had a 5-year-old kindergarten daughter and she is at gunpoint by a deranged shooter, would you want someone on site to stop that shooter and save the life of your daughter? And not one of them has been able to say no. So this isn't about anti-gun, pro-gun. It's nothing about that. It's simply about saving the lives of our children. And actually, there was an incident where a moose was out on the playground and could have killed children that were on cross-country skis having difficulty getting away. So the biometric locker provision for perhaps keeping a rifle in a school is also a very important provision. And all I can say is if we don't consider and put this policy through, when there's a school shooting in Alaska and children and staff die, we're going to regret it. So I hope that the committee will take this seriously. I hope those who are generally in favor of restricting guns will realize this is something that being pro-gun or anti-gun really doesn't have anything to do with. So with that, Mr. Chair, thank you for allowing me to recap what the bill does. It requires training. It requires Alaska Police Standards vetting, which is a psychological assessment and a medical screening. It requires ongoing training that the school board would set. I'm in full support of the state covering the cost of this, and it would cover the employees' costs for any time spent training. It requires coordination of the district with the local law enforcement and ensuring that they know who the people are and there's a connection with those staff that are designated that are would be concealed carrying.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Are there questions for Senator Hughes or her staff? Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Hughes. So your staff or somebody provided us with a petition with tons of names on it, and I think more than half are folks that don't live in Alaska. So I'm wondering, how is this petition generated? It's interesting that folks are paying attention to what we're doing here in Alaska and all these other communities throughout the country. So I'm just curious to how is this petition generated in relationship to Senate Bill 173. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. It was, through the chair, it was posted online and sent out by email, and the majority of the people are from Alaska. I do see there are some from some other locations. They obviously heard about it and were interested in it. We have had contacts, actually I believe it was West Virginia, who is looking at similar legislation, so it could be that through their other states looking at this, they were just generally expressing support as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions? Seeing and hearing none, we will reopen public testimony in just a minute. As in tradition of Senate Labor and Commerce, we are going to alternate testimony, one person in the room followed by one person on the phone, and we'll do that as we go through today. Everyone will have 2 minutes to testify. What will happen is when 2 minutes expires, I will prompt you to wrap up your testimony. If you don't wrap up your testimony within about 15 seconds, I will prompt you to be done then. And if you're in the room, that means please be done. If you're online, we'll just have to mute you. So That's how we'll proceed today. Okay? All right. We'll open public testimony. And we will start in the room with John Clow. And if I mispronounce your name, please correct. Please correct me. You state your name and affiliation and begin your testimony.
My name is John Clow. I'm affiliated as a 50-year resident of Alaska and a parent of four grandchildren, four daughters and four grandchildren here in the state. I've lived in Alaska since 1974. I own multiple firearms. And unlike, I bet, almost everybody else that has testified before you, I've had the personal experience of using my own handgun for the apprehension of two armed and dangerous felons as a civilian. For that, I received a commendation from the legislature, and I was named Citizen of the Year by the Alaska Peace Officers Association in 1983. And I'm here to testify very strongly against SB 173. This bill has many flaws. I'm a retired attorney, and I can see some of them pretty obviously. The first, though, is just as a citizen. It's mandatory. If there's any issue that on a community-by-community basis, we should allow our people to have input as teachers, parents, grandparents, citizens, this is one. What might be right for one district may be very wrong for another. This denies that. Second, it is unfunded. And we all know with the crisis in education funding, none of these districts are going to be able to hire full-time people at full-time rates to fulfill this function. They're going to be compelled to rely on volunteers and place those volunteers with guns in our schools. That worries me as a grandparent of four elementary school students. Finally, the training requirements, I believe, set forth in the proposed statute are grossly inadequate. The issue is not whether you've had a course on how to safely load, lock up, and operate a firearm. The issue is when, if, and how deadly force should be used inside the schools populated by our children and grandchildren. If you're going to be a police officer in Juneau, you have to go to the State Trooper Academy for 17 weeks of intensive training, many, many hours on the firing range, much classroom work. They now have these force action simulators on the computer and live action training exercises. That's the type of training I would insist upon to have somebody with a concealed gun in Elk Bay Elementary, where two of my grandchildren go to school. Having been in that situation once in my life, I know the difference between knowing how to use a gun and when to use a gun. Thank you for hearing my testimony, and thank you for your service to the state. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll go online to Mike Coons.
Yeah, this is Mike Coons from Palmer, and I'm speaking for myself. I'm a life and heritage member of the NRA. I have taught hunter safety for several years to help young people be responsible and safe firearm owners. Moms Demand Action is advocating against SB 173. I am fully supporting SB 173. I hear this so often from the anti-gun. Let's make it clear, anti-Second Amendment and U.S. Constitution side. You know, Senators Gray Jackson and Dunbar, you know that vote that you took for a senator? Since you oppose thus you oppose or your oath. This is about the ability of teachers and school staff to be able to be armed, concealed, to stop any attack by a shooter. This is about those teachers and staff taking personal responsibility for their safety and the safety of the children in their care. I have long said and have challenged the anti-gunner to only go into places that deny a firearm. That way, if they happen to be involved in a shooter situation, then they can only worry about the shooter. They surely don't want to worry about a responsible armed person protecting them, but they don't want that protection. For being against this bill is just that, not wanting responsible teachers and staff the ability to stop a shooter. If I had children in a school, I would gladly have them in a school that takes on the immediate safety of my children. I invite the anti-gun parents to only enroll their children in gun-free schools. Of course, you then are taking full responsibility for those children's harmed by an active shooter while awaiting police response. When seconds count, the police are 10, 15, 20, or more minutes away. Thank you.
Next up, we will go to Tom Boutine in the room. I'm sorry. That's the wrong name. We're going to go in the room to Anna Gifford. Further testifiers would please refrain from impugning any motives of anyone on the committee or any other testifiers, or please also refrain from calling out anyone by name.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You have 2 minutes. Please state your name and affiliation. Begin your testimony.
Thanks, Chair Bjorkman and committee members. My name is Ann Gifford. I'm here testifying on my own today as a parent of 3 kids who went through the Juneau schools, as a school volunteer, and as a retired school attorney. I spent more than 25 years of my career working with Alaska school districts. And based on that work experience, as well as my personal experience, I'm here to say that requiring every school district in the state to assign a staff member to carry a gun at every school will make our schools more dangerous, not less. School personnel don't have the extensive training and experience it takes to successfully use a gun in an active shooter situation. Even the police don't always have the training and experience it takes, as we saw to our horror in both the Parkland and Uvalde shootings. Assigning minimally trained school personnel to carry guns at school is a recipe for disaster. On a regular day, it increases the risk of people getting shot because of accidental discharges or curious students getting access to guns. And in a crisis, it increases the risk that the staffer might shoot the wrong person or be mistaken for a shooter and get shot themselves when law enforcement does respond. In the rare case where a school has a highly trained person on staff and there's a need for them to carry a gun, school superintendents already have the authority to authorize them to do that under existing Alaska law. This bill isn't needed. Please vote no. And thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony, ma'am. Next up, we'll go online to Tom Boutine.
Yeah, Tom Boutine from Juneau. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 173 is very much needed. I believe we may see unusually broad economic dislocation in Alaska. I read that 1 in 5 adults are SNAP enrollees at a time when we are also told that there are 2 vacant jobs for every job seeker. While petroleum production dropped by 80%, our population doubled, but we're now heavily weighted to government workers, people on welfare, and retirees. We intended to expand natural resource development by adding manufacturing and agriculture, but we failed. The factories we once had, pulp mills, huge sawmills, and canneries all along the coast have been replaced to a measurable degree by fentanyl and food stamps. It may not be possible to give people enough that they don't believe they are entitled to still more. The tradition of producing goods the world wants to buy is too easily lost. Economic dislocation could trigger some nutty people, and a few of them might be violent beyond their video games. For reasons I can't begin to understand, people who feel that they have been unfairly left out of gender machinations, the middle class, or the football team may decide to become murderers at a school. Senate Bill 173 provides an honest and constructive response, and I've heard of no other. Most of us came from a time and place in which students routinely brought their guns to school. My mother reminded me just the other day that I would have been encouraged to quit school at age 14 had students not been allowed to carry a pocket knife. My family quit school at age 14 typically. Times have changed, and this bill addresses risks now faced by students and teachers in Alaska. No one wants the task of telling the families of murdered students that we looked at the risk and saw that nothing could be done. Please move this bill out of committee as soon as possible. Thank you very much for your time, and thank you for this hearing.
Next up in the room, Frank Bergstrom.
Frank Bergstrom, Juneau, Alaska. I am reminded, well, first off, I support Senate Bill 173. I am reminded of the old adage that says God created mankind and Sam Colt made him equal. What we are really talking about here, I believe, is not so much in giving teachers scary guns, but in empowering defenders. And I will define a defender as someone who is willing and able to defend themselves and others, especially those that are in their protection, i.e. children. There are three parts to being a proper defender. One is to have the attitude of being a defender and the desire to do so. Number two is to have the skills, the training, and the tools to effect that. And number three is to have a plan for all situations in which you may find yourself that you can apply those skills, training, and tools and your attitude to be a defender. And that is what I see this bill doing. Not turning people from one thing into another against their will, but to empower those in our society who are willing to defend those that need that defense. Thank you.
Next up now online, David Hanna. Mr. Hanna, please state your name and location and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is David Hanna. I live in Juneau. I'd like to echo Mr. Bergstrom's comments. They're very well put. And thanking Senator Hughes for bringing this bill forward, I'm totally in favor of it. It seems to be a very well thought out bill. I think it addresses all the concerns that we've heard, and any possible measure we can take to protect our children must be embraced. You know, while some will argue that this bill is going to cause accidents and all sorts of fears like that, the fact is those possibilities are very small. But in the meantime, we know the possibility exists for a mass shooting to take place, and that law enforcement response will most likely be way too late to prevent tragedy. So I say if we have responsible citizens who are willing to accept the duty to try and protect our children, we should enable them in any way we can. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next in the room, Sally Donaldson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Sally Donaldson from Juneau, Alaska, and I'm testifying against House Senate Bill 173. My reasons are that I don't believe that school districts should be mandated to appoint a person to be in charge of confronting a shooter in school. I don't believe that person would be adequately trained with the training that's mentioned in the bill, and I believe that it's too great of a responsibility for a person, a school person, to be charged with confronting a shooter with a gun in school. I also think it would increase the risk of a child being harmed, children and staff being harmed in the schools. I know that there are other ways that we can help and make our communities safer. I am not saying that guns should not be allowed in communities. I know that in Alaska we have a lot of gun owners, and I'm not objecting to that at all. It's just that having a gun in school, I believe, is the wrong thing to do, and I oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next online, Charlie France, please state your name and your location and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Senator Forkman, Chair. This is Charlie France. I'm calling from Homer, Alaska. Committee members, thank you all for giving me the opportunity to testify this afternoon. I simply wanted to say that I support Senate Bill 173 and think that we should do our best to do something to protect our children and quit ignoring the problem and acting as though it will go away. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. In the room now, we have Heather Bennett.
Hi, my name is Heather Bennett of Juneau. I'm a mom and a wife and a business owner, an employee. all here in Juneau, and a friend. And I speak for those who may not know what it was like to be in school when school shootings started. I used to go to school when school shootings didn't exist. And there was a piece that most people don't know nowadays. I had cousins who went to schools in Littleton, and I was, you know, coming of age when Columbine happened. And to have schools as gun-free zones without somebody trained seems just like it's leaving them unprotected. And we have these children who are trusting in the adults to keep them safe. And when they can't, it's not that they don't want to, but they can't. Unless you have some sort of fancy metal shield that can keep bullets from hitting the children or themselves, there's no way to do that. So I support 173 because it puts somebody who would be trained. And training includes the mental aspect of training. You don't want to put your finger on the trigger unless you're willing to destroy what's in front of that firearm. And most people, even with a concealed carry, they don't want to destroy another person. The only reason most people would be willing to do that is because they're protecting somebody who is vulnerable. So thank you so much for the time to sit here in front of you and testify. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next online, we have Christine Everett. Please state your name and your location. You have 2 minutes, ma'am.
Okay. My name is Christine Everett. I'm from North Pole. I'm a mother and a grandmother, and I'm a 36-plus year resident of Alaska. And I'm speaking, I want to thank you for the opportunity to comment. I'm speaking in opposition to SB 173. One of the major reasons is because this is a mandate. It requires school districts to do something, and I strongly believe in local control of these kinds of issues. Another objection I have is that this is an unfunded mandate when our schools are already so fund, and there is no funding attached to this bill for either training or reimbursement for the time that they're spending on that. I do not believe that the amount of training that's listed in this bill truly prepares people who are not trained law enforcement to take on this task. Another concern I have is that it provides immunity to participants in the program unless they can meet the standard of gross negligence. This means if an accident does happen in the school, it's highly likely that they will not be held responsible for it. I think that makes it easier for accidents to happen. I do want to mention there are two other bills under consideration, HB 164, supporting secure gun storage, and HB 162, and there's a Senate bill, which I'm sorry, I don't have the number for, a corresponding Senate bill, which is a red flag bill, which allows guns to be removed from people who are high risk. So,
please conclude your testimony.
Think about that. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next in the room is Patty Owen. Next in the room after Patty is Odette Edgar.
Thank you, Senator Bjorkman and members of the committee. My name is Patty Owen, and I'm from Juneau representing myself. I'm a lifelong Alaskan and have children and grandchildren born and raised in Alaska. And I'm a school health and safety advocate that is emphatically opposed to SB 173, although I'm not anti-gun. I don't believe that arming teachers and volunteers to carry guns, no matter if trained or not, in Alaska schools will keep schools safer, nor serve as a substitute for trained law enforcement officers. In fact, law enforcement agencies across the country are opposed to bills of this type, as first responders may not be able to distinguish between a shooter and armed personnel. There's also no evidence that this would lead to lower rates of violence. With an estimated 2 in 3 children in Alaska having experienced trauma, and 1/4 of Alaska high school students seriously considering suicide, lawmakers should look at a more comprehensive approach to school safety. This includes supporting and funding school health and safety coordinators, more school counselors, mental health services in schools, school social workers and school nurses, training school staff in trauma-engaged practices, providing suicide prevention programs and mental health education, as well as providing training and developing emergency operations plans and funding for school security equipment. With gun suicide deaths so high in Alaska, there are more common sense gun violence prevention strategies other than this bill, such as safe storage laws and extreme risk protective orders, such as Florida enacted after Parkland. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Online now we have Robert Matthews. Please state your name, location. You have 2 minutes.
Yes, my name is Robert Matthews. I'm from Delta Junction, and I'm calling in to support Senate Bill 173. I'm a retired military police officer, and I currently work hand-in-hand with a police force. I have assisted and assist in the development of response plans and procedures, including police response to schools. And police will never be there when the shooter starts. They are always delayed by that response. Having someone that's in the school with a firearm that has trained will be able to deal with that active shooter situation before a police officer ever arrives on scene. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. In the room, we have Odette Edgar.
Good afternoon, Chairman Bjorkman and members of the Senate Labor Committee. My name is Odette Edgar. I reside in Juneau and have lived in Alaska for 54 years. I represent myself. My parents were teachers, and I'm currently a volunteer in local schools teaching folk dance to third graders. I am testifying in opposition to SB 173. Arming teachers, staff, and volunteers and expecting them to do the job of trained SWAT teams and military commandos won't work. The reasons are simple. People who do SWAT-type work are professionals intensively trained in tactics and marksmanship. SWAT teams also depend on key leaders who can think strategically and coordinate efforts. Folks who would carry handguns in Alaska schools are most unlikely to have this level of training or strategic support. They probably also lack the conditioning to overcome the body's natural defenses when confronting extreme danger. These reactions can be heavy adrenaline rushes with tunnel vision, impaired hearing and speech, shaky arms and hands, and even physical paralysis. We are setting up a scenario unlikely to succeed with any number of tragic consequences. I agree with the sponsor's statement. If we want to prevent the deaths of school children in Alaska, we need to act. However, I urge you to consider front-end methods proven to protect children in the place where they are most at risk, in the home. Please support secure gun storage laws like HB 164 and extreme risk red flag laws like SB 229. These bills address the most common sources of child gun deaths in Alaska. States that have adopted these laws have been able to lower the rate of death and injuries of their children. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Go back to the phone with Ryan Petty. Mr. Petty, please state your name and location. You have 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Ryan Petty. I'm calling from Florida. Chair Bjorkman, members of the committee. As I said, my name is Ryan Petty. I'm the vice chair of the Florida State Board of Education, a commissioner on the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Commission tasked with investigating the Parkland tragedy. My path to this testimony is marked by profound loss, the loss of my 14-year-old daughter, Elena, in the Parkland school shooting. That tragedy has not only shaped my life in previously unimaginable ways, but also has propelled me into a relentless pursuit of ensuring the safety and security of our children in schools across our nation. I am here to express my support for Senate Bill 173. I base my support on the resounding success of the Florida Guardian program, a program with which I am deeply familiar and have witnessed its significant impact firsthand. I am an honorary Florida Guardian, and I have been through that training. The Florida Guardian program emerged as a crucial initiative responding to the pressing need for improved security in our schools and to reduce response time when seconds count. Senate Bill 173 addresses a critical aspect in securing Alaska schools, the time it takes for responding law enforcement to arrive on scene during an active shooter threat. History has shown us that an immediate response is crucial in minimizing harm and saving lives. As was the case in Florida in 2018, there were many opposed to the idea of training and arming school staff, claiming the mere presence of firearms on a school campus will in some way make students less safe. They offered an endless laundry list of bad things that would happen if our legislation passed. That has simply not been the case. The Florida Guardian program has been an incredible success in the state of Florida. It represents not only a best way to stop a threat, it has been a deterrent. I urge you to support Senate Bill 173. Thank you.
Going back in the room, John Sonnen.
I wish you didn't jump up like that. I got a too bad fall last Sunday. And I think I broke a rib. And my back is... John Sonnen from across the pond over there in Douglas, representing civilized humanity, I think. Now, I've noticed that the makers of this amendment seem to feel that everything's binary and that you're either pro-gun or anti-gun. That doesn't really pan out. All these people in whom here are, I'm sure, anti-violence, anti-gun violence, not necessarily anti-gun at all. In fact, I don't think any of them are. That binary way of looking at the world, though, is the issue with the makers of this amendment. We think that we should be taken back to the Western days when everyone were their own judge, and justice was availed by the equality produced, thanks to another testifier, the equality produced with guns. I don't think that'd be the case at all, and I firmly am certain that more lead flying around in the school setting is only going to kill our future by destroying the minds that will become what we should all be seeking, the utopic reality of peace and tranquility. 173 will not, SB 173 will not get us there. I firmly oppose it, and I hope you guys can see how disastrous it'll be. Thanks.
Thank you for your testimony. Testifiers will please refrain from imputing the motives of any members of the Senate or other testifiers. Going back online, Jim Irvine.
Yeah, hi, Jim Irvine with Faster Saves Lives. I was not intending to testify, but it's a group that's named in the bill. Happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you, Mr. Irvine. We'll keep that in mind. Back in the room to Joanne Bloom.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Joanne Bloom. I live here in Juneau. I'm a gun owner. And I think I'd like to fill in with all the testimony we've heard so far. I've got some facts to fill in with. And the first one is that when a child goes to school, kindergarten through their senior year, all 13 years, they have a 0.2% chance of being involved in a school shooting. And that's according to Save Our Schools Advocacy Research. So that's a pretty minimal chance that this is going to happen in our schools. We also heard that our public safety officers are trained for 17 weeks, and I spoke with Sergeant Boyd Brank at the Alaska Public Safety Training Academy in Sitka, and in those 17 weeks, just about every day, they do weapons training, and they spend a whole week's training on handguns, another 3 days on rifle training, and another 3 days on shotgun training. In contrast, we just heard from our FASTER person, that stands for Faculty Administrator Safety Training and Emergency Response Program, and that's offered by the Buckeye Firearms Foundation, that's specified in this bill. And that training, as far as I can tell in my research, is a 3-day training for our school staff and volunteers. So I think that Senate Bill 173 is very unnecessary. I'm very opposed to it. And I think, like others have mentioned, we should be working harder on keeping guns out of our children's hands and guns away from those exhibiting dangerous tendencies through our red flag laws. So thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next online, Shannon Green. Please state your name and location. You have 2 minutes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Shannon Green. I'm a resident of Juneau, and I have 3 boys that will have gone through the school system here from elementary to high school. I'm also a 32-year retired military first responder serving here in Southeast Alaska, a lifelong lifesaver. And I can tell you, time is of the essence in emergencies. I fully support Senate Bill 173 and am grateful to Senator Hughes for introducing this critical piece of legislation. Knowing there is a qualified, trained, concealed carry individual who will act as a first responder to stop a school shooter is a responsible offensive posture in today's environment. Otherwise, our irreplaceable children are sitting ducks and not optimally protected. Senior government officials, movie stars, sports stars, and others all rely upon armed protection. Our responsible school staff are the first stopgap measure and defenders. There are active shooter training teams, just ask Haines, Alaska. Better options are available. This bill calls for qualified and willing individuals, rather than depending or defending a student with a chair or a table. I ask that you pass the Safe Schools Act and prevent the unthinkable from touching our communities. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We have run completely through the list of folks that have signed up to testify in the room that I have on my list. If folks would like to testify, if you could sign in, we will get your name recorded and we will call you to testify. Up next online is Joel Sigmund.
Hello, this is Joel Sigmund. I live in Wasilla, Alaska, and I'm all for the safe gun thing. I think the more people that have guns in a school, make everyone safer because people wouldn't be stupid enough to go in. Back in 75, I used to be able to take my gun to school. They had a shooting range down in the basement at Clark Junior High. I was the 20th person in Alaska to get it. It is very good for teachers to carry guns because there'd be less people coming in thinking they're going to get away with it. And it'd be much safer if you got a qualified teacher that knows how to shoot and every teacher's got a gun, who's going to want to come in? Nobody. I'm all for it. Thank you. And you have a good day.
Up next, we have Doug Walrath. Please state your name and location. You have 2 minutes.
Yes, good afternoon. My name's Doug Walrath. I'm calling from Nome. I'm the parent of two middle school age children, and I'm calling in support of Senate Bill 173 and just wanted to say first my heart broke for Mr. Petty as he testified, knowing that he was part of the 0.2% of families that potentially are impacted. I think regardless of the percent, nobody wants to be in that place. I call also, I'm the director of the Northwestern Alaska Career and Technical Center in Nome. I've served as a school administrator here for 15 years. My background before education was in the military. I'm a combat vet. I taught gun hunter ed when I started teaching in Idaho back in 1996. And I would say that, you know, fresh into my teaching career in 99, we were all pretty shook by what happened in Columbine. And to think that we're now 25 years along since then and nothing has effectively changed. I walk school halls every day. I probably do so with a different lens of walking in just because of training and my own background in the military. And I would note that, you know, several people testified about the time of being on site. 5 weeks ago, there was an incident that occurred in my office where I come back and found a person that was unconscious. I was the only one that was there. Administered first aid, called EMS. It took 12 minutes, and that was a pretty fast response time for EMS to come out to address that situation. From my office where I sit in Nome Belt High School, I feel confident of who I am and what training is there in addition to be one of those people that could serve in this capacity at no cost to the state because I'm already paid for being here. And from my office, I can be anywhere in the school within 2 minutes. And I think that's a world of difference from waiting 10 or more extra minutes. So thank you for the opportunity to testify. I appreciate it.
Senator Dunbar has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Walrath, for your testimony. You're in sort of a unique position of people that have called in being an administrator there in Nome. And one of the points that folks have made about this bill is that, or I should say, the existing law allows folks to do this already, or school districts to choose to do this. And so I'm wondering, has Nome, have you done this? Do you have folks that are trained and caring? And sort of why or why not, if you do have that option?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Dunbar. I'm in my position, I'm actually employed through Bering Strait School District, working here in Nome. So I honestly don't know on behalf of either school districts of current legislation that's there. I am a proponent to the person you had mentioned about local control, you know, of not having mandated. I think from my shoes, what I would note is having legislation and the opportunity to do something. As a parent of two middle school age kids, it's on my mind, just being there all the time as it is with others. And I'm in a place where I would be one that I would avail myself, you know, to act in that capacity. And honestly, in an office that I'm separated from the school population for those concerns that are there for immediate access and guns and things like that, there's conversations to be had and ways of doing things like this that I believe are safe and can address that issue of being immediate on site and in rural Alaska, not waiting for the first responders for an extensive amount of time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Walrath. Up next, Lynn Davis. Lynn, please state your name and location. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. I'm Lynn Davis from Juneau. I'm a 30-year Alaska resident. I retired from Department of Labor, and I have taught high school for 10 years down south. Like most teachers, I strongly oppose arming teachers. Thank you for trying to protect students, but SB 173 brings too many risks, and it's another school expense that many of our districts can't afford. And 173 does not have much of a safe national record. And I would say let's all of us who care about kids' safety focus on strategies that have demonstrated strong safety record in lowering deaths. And that would be HB 164, secure storage, and HB 162, the extreme risk. Most law enforcement are strongly opposed to SB 173, and they fear that too many lay people with weapons can be overcome in stressful situations. And most parents strongly oppose arming teachers. Law enforcement people spend years, as we've heard, learning to safely handle life-threatening situations. Police are selected for certain occupational skills and innate abilities. Teachers and other school staff, in general, have vastly different innate skills. So thank you for your care for children, but thank you for your wisdom in rejecting Senate Bill 173. And please consider focusing on the other two House bills where there is a safety record. Thank you very much.
Up next, we have William Luce. Mr. Luce, please state your name and location for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Yes, my name is Lieutenant Colonel retired William Luce. From Palmer. I retired almost 28 years in the Army, and a retired Alaska school teacher. I came here through Troops to Teachers as a veteran. I'm in support of SB 173. In February 19th, 1997, I was in Bethel as a teacher, and soon to be my first sergeant, Ron Edwards, as principal of the school, was shot to death along with student Joe Palacios by Ivan Ramsey. Ron Edwards had survived Vietnam only to be killed at his school in Bethel. If he'd had a gun, it might have had a different outcome. The ADN did a 20-year interview with Ivan Ramsey 7 years ago, and there was an important fact laid out by Van Ramsey's own words. After one of our very brave teachers tried to stand him down twice with his gun, after a policeman got there finally and fired his weapon, did Van Ramsey put his weapon down? And in his own words stated, "I did not want to die." That's the fact. SB 173 will keep students, staff safe in our school. Veterans, we have the highest percentage of veterans in the state of Alaska. Veterans would stand up. There was a federal Troops to Teachers program. And I do think that my 25 years in the infantry, I would be qualified and not be considered a risk with handling a weapon. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, Rochelle Parker. Ms. Parker, please state your name and location for the record. You have 2 minutes. We'll come back to Ms. Parker. Up next, Michael Gerhart. Mr. Gerhart, please state your name and location for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Yes. This is Michael Gerhart from Wasilla, and I'm in support of SB 173. Time is of the essence when your life is in danger. And having trained people with a weapon in the schools would save a lot of time and a lot of lives. So I'm fully in support of it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll go back and see if Rochelle Parker is available.
Hi, thanks for coming back to me. I am a constituent from Anchorage and a parent of elementary school-aged children here in Anchorage, and I strongly oppose Senate Bill 173. Guns don't belong in schools.
Ma'am, please state your name.
And like all of us,
I have been horrified by the school shootings that have become too common in our country, and I'm astounded that lawmakers nationally and statewide have not acted to make schools safer by enacting common sense gun reforms. And I do believe we should take serious measures to fortify schools and prepare teachers, staff, and students for emergencies. But arming teachers is not the answer to keeping children safe in schools. I'm concerned that if guns are introduced to classrooms, then students could potentially access them, harming themselves or others. Firearms are the leading cause of death for children and teens in Alaska and nationwide, and Alaska has the highest rate of youth suicide in the nation. Even if they are properly trained, how can we ask teachers to take on the role of law enforcement in a chaotic active shooter situation? Especially if the shooter is a student or a former student, as has happened in the past. And more students could be hurt in the crossfire. We ask so much of our teachers, and I know they would do anything to protect their students, but more guns will not make schools more safe. And like others have said, we should instead put our focus on measures that do work to prevent gun violence and gun suicide, like supporting House Bill 164 to promote secure firearm storage and Senate Bill 229 to use due process to temporarily remove firearms from those who are in extreme risk to themselves or others. Secure gun storage matters since the majority of school shooters acquired their firearm from the home of a parent or close relative, and a study of targeted school violence done by the U.S. Secret Service showed that in-school gunfire incidents, up to 80% of shooters under the age of 18 got the gun from their home or the homes of friends or relatives. So I would urge you to support those bills, and please vote against this bill. Thank you for your time.
Ms. Parker, if you could state your name and location for the record, that would be most excellent.
Yes, my name is Rochelle Parker, and I'm calling from Anchorage. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Up next is Tamara Cruz Roselius. Please state your name and location for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Tamara Cruz Roselius. I'm in Fairbanks, and thank you, Senator Bjorkman, and the committee. I am not anti-gun. I am a mom with kids, and I am anti-SB 173 for four reasons. First, local control rather than big government mandates. This bill takes away local schools' authority to decide what is best for their students by forcing districts to assign staff or volunteers to carry a concealed handgun at school and pay for their training, which is my second point, what our schools don't need, more mandates without funding. This will add to our schools' deficit crisis that is a priority for this legislature. Third, this is completely unnecessary. Alaska law already provides that a school's chief administration officer can allow a person to carry a firearm on preschool or K through 12 school grounds. This is adding nothing to their ability to place guns in schools. And lastly, safety. Well, it takes 17 weeks to in the Trooper Academy to be trained. That's the training we need for snipers in our schools, not just how to use the gun, but more importantly, when to use the gun in schools surrounded by our children. I thank you for your time.
Up next, Janelle Dockendorf. Please state your name and location for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Janelle Dockendorf, and I'm in Wasilla, Alaska, and I represent myself. I support the bill 173 because as long as there's extensive training to the teachers and staff in the school with extensive training, it takes too long for law enforcement to get there and stuff, at least if the, they're extensively trained and the guns are locked up. Where only teachers can get to them if anything happens. We need to start protecting the kids. And if they can't have security guards at each door, which I would recommend, but there's not enough people to put at each door of every school, that would be the ideal thing, security guards first before the guns in school. But that's, there's not enough people to do that. So, yes, I think something has to be done. So thank you for your time, and I support SB 173.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, Sherry Ruiz. Please state your name and location. You have 2 minutes.
Yes, sir. Thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is Sherry Ruiz. I'm calling from Palmer, and I support SB 173. It protects our kids. It adds an added layer of protection for our children in schools. It's already been proven out there that gun-free zones do not work based on all the history of mass shootings that are active shooters and shootings that take place at the schools and other places. But this is for the schools. The storage of guns I've heard mentioned throughout here doesn't work. Storage of guns is a joke because the majority of crime that takes place is from stolen firearms. My nephew was murdered here by a stolen firearm. So the storage, yeah, that's okay. But, you know, that's not going to stop somebody who wants to go into a school and shoot up kids, their peers at the school. Some of the stats that are being thrown around here that I'm listening to are inaccurate. But that's okay. Because I think what we heard today from Mr. Patty, he has lived every parent and every person who's called in here nightmare. He has lived the statistics that people are saying won't happen here in our state, and it did happen here once, as somebody else already spoke in. I really think we should take heed to what Mr. Patty is saying, what he lived through, and how he supports this bill, and how he turns something traumatic into something good by having the Florida guardianship. For us here in Alaska, I really, really think that we need to think, how many kids are people willing to gamble every day they go to school by not allowing this as a layer of protection for our children? Me, I don't want anybody to go to school and not come home. So I agree and support this layer of protection, and I would be here asking whoever's in charge, how can I help you make this happen? I love our kids that much. Thank you. That's all I have to say.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we are going to go to the Homer LIO and hear from Alex Copland. Mr. Copland, please state your name and location and begin your testimony.
Hello, thank you. You can hear me. This is Alex Copland from Homer. I've taught for over 45 years. I've taught hunter safety classes. I've been in two school lockdowns because of guns in the area. I have two grandkids here at Homer. As we heard the previous speaker talk, you know, if we're really serious about protecting our kids, we'll have a security guards like I had when I went to school in Chicago, and we had proper procedure put in place. Having teachers carry firearms is a recipe for disaster. The idea that a staff person would have a handgun and go into a shooting might be happening and be hearing maybe an assault rifle going off, and they're not armed properly and they don't have protective gear, and who knows where they're coming from. The training involved in that, when I've read articles, it's a ton of hours of training. So besides from teaching, you're also learning how to dodge bullets and protect students and cover every corner. And even SWAT members who are specifically trained for these events can develop tunnel vision. So what if this program does come to pass? We've already heard about the expense that it might cause school districts. And please, let's keep funding education the way we need to and not adding more stuff. But for this volunteer that has a handgun, what if they are out of the building? What if they are sick? What if they need to be at school and they feel so badly they come anyways? What if they're hungover? What, you know, we're asking a lot of one individual when we really do have an answer, and we do could hire security guards and make that a priority. No amount of training can fully equip somebody to deal with this kind of scenario, so whoever takes on that responsibility, it's huge. We have a massive problem in our country, shootings in all areas is just, we just can't understand it. Yes, we need safer gun laws, but we also need our schools funded so we know who those potential people might be. We need to have people in place that can check that. So keep doing what you're doing, but let's not have guns in the schools, please. I beg of you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, Stephen Retke. Please state your name and location. You have 2 minutes.
Yes, my name is Stephen Retke. I'm from Eagle River, and I was a maintenance supervisor for my background. I am basically in very much in support of SB 173. I think if you have that horrible situation where there is a shooting, solutions have to happen right now. And in the time it takes for police to arrive, I think you're far and away better to have protection right there on site. That's my statement. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Dr. Maureen Longworth. Dr. Longworth, please state your name and location for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Maureen Longworth, and I'm a resident in Juneau and calling in from Juneau. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I moved to Alaska 31 years ago to practice medicine, and I've practiced here in Ketchikan, Tenneke, Skagway, and Bethel, and in Juneau, of course, mostly. And prior to that, I worked in inner city emergency rooms, even at San Francisco General Hospital, and cared for gunshot wound victims, even babies, who I watched go through lots of suffering and death. My medical career has trained me to have an expertise in studying evidence that fosters health and safety in our communities. And what surprises me about this HB 173 that's being considered today is it already has evidence that it has failed in other schools and brought more risks and safety to those communities. And I personally think it would be devastating to sink our money that already is limited in our school districts and take on a plan that has been proven to not work. And there are other bills at hand, HB 162, that have helped and have evidence basing their recommendation on success in other schools. So I think it's kind of a no-brainer, and I hope that, and I don't mean to diminish the intelligence of the people on the committee voting today. What I mean is I hope that you will see and study the evidence and not pass 173 when there's other options. And as a physician, we just don't need more violence and guns in the schools. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, Gerald Voss. Please state your name and location for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Gerald Voss, and I'm in support of SB 173. I believe the state should take a lesson from the airlines after 9/11, in addition to the federal air marshals we had on the aircraft and pilots who were allowed to carry weapons in a locked, hard-sided case. We were trained to look for mental, possibly mental or instabilities, profiling, you know, people that may be a problem. And so this prevented people from really knowing where anybody was. Only the crew would know who was armed on the aircraft. And so that could be carried over into the school so that the children wouldn't have any idea. They would never know who's armed on what particular day or who was trained, and only the staff would know. And so that would work out quite nicely, and everybody was well-trained and professional, and everybody had locked-sided cases if there was going to be an incident that occurred. Like I said, I'm in support of SB 173. I think we should tear down our woke agendas and get more mental health involved in the stability of these cases and take that money and put it towards the safety of people being able to carry firearms. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Our final testifier for today is Michelle Vasquez. Ms. Vasquez, please state your name and location. You have 2 minutes.
Hi, Senator Bjorkman and members of the committee. My name is Michelle Vasquez, and I live in Soldotna. I'm sure it will come as no shock to you, Senator, that I oppose SB 173. I don't like every aspect of this bill, but mainly the mandate. I think it's already in law that schools can have someone carry a gun, but I don't like the mandate because it just sends the wrong message. And with the limited amount of training for someone to take on this responsibility, I can see so many things that could go wrong with a staff person or a volunteer.
and the training is extremely inadequate for this type of thing. And I don't know, someone with 3 days of training is going to be put in the position of making potentially a life or death decision. And I just don't think that guns in school is the answer. I think we should go to the front end and try to prevent gun violence. So, again, I am adamantly opposed to SB 173. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. With that, we will close public testimony on Senate Bill 173 and bring the bill back before the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Is there any committee discussion?
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment I'd like to move.
Senator Dunbar.
I move, it doesn't have a label actually, but it's before you. H.1 amendment. This came from the sponsor of legislation, and I'm moving it on their behalf. It reads, page 4, following line 15, insert a new subsection to read, subsection G. Subject to appropriation, the department shall reimburse a school district for training costs incurred under A3 and 4 of this section. And I'll just note, Mr. Do you want to object for purposes of discussion?
I'll object for the purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll note, I just consulted with Senator Hughes, and she pointed out the department in this reference here is the Department of Education and Early Childhood Development. And I'll just say, speaking in favor of this amendment, I actually was planning to bring a similar amendment to increase funding for our schools to pay for training costs. But we were going back and forth trying to figure out what the number would be, the increase in the BSA. And we weren't able to lock that down in time. And so I appreciate the sponsor bringing this forward in a way that I think achieves a similar goal, which is that this would not be an unfunded mandate, but rather would now have a fiscal note attached. So with that, that's the amendment, Mr. Chair. And I'll say again, this is being brought on behalf of the sponsor.
Very good. Is there any objection to Amendment 1, 33-LS0781/8.1? H as in hotel. Hearing no objection, Amendment 1 is adopted. Is there any further committee discussion? Seeing none, I look to the will of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to report Senate Bill 173-LSOSCAR781/H out of committee with amendments and a fiscal note forthcoming. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, Senate Bill 173, Work Order 33-LS0781/hotel moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork and set up for the next bill. We're back on the record. It's 301 here in Belt's Room 105, the Thomas Stewart Office Building. Next up, we're going to take up Senate Bill 211, Agricultural Products, Loans, and Sales. With us, we have Brent Goodrum, Deputy Commissioner from the Department of Natural Resources, to present the bill. Mr. Goodrum, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Good afternoon, Chair Bjorkman and fellow members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. For the record, I am Brent Goodrum, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. I want to thank you for the opportunity to present to you today on Senate Bill 211, the Crop Act. The legislation is intended to incentivize food production in Alaska. Governor Dunleavy introduced Senate Bill 211 as an important immediate step, boosting state policies already in statute while we continue to work on short, medium, and long-term recommendations and actions. Governor Dunleavy's overarching goals with Senate Bill 211 are to increase food security and independence for Alaskans and to grow and expand Alaska's agriculture economic sector. Let's first take a quick look at agriculture in Alaska today. A robust agricultural sector has long been a vision of Alaska's leaders. Agriculture is even prominently displayed on the seal of the state of Alaska. I'd like to note that since this slide was first created, we've updated some recent census data. According to the USDA's updated 2022 National Agricultural Statistics Service Census of Agriculture, there are nearly 1,200 Alaska farms and ranches that produce about $39.7 million in crop value and $51.2 million in animal production. But a state as big and diverse as Alaska surely has the potential to do so much more, given the proper support. Why is it important to grow the agriculture sector in Alaska? As Alaskans, we simply require greater food security and independence for all Alaskans. We need to continue to diversify our economy and further develop our emerging economic sectors. It is important to be upfront and honest about some of the key challenges to agriculture in Alaska. Farming and ranching are high-cost, high-risk businesses. New farmers in particular are often starting literally from scratch with the clearing of raw land here in Alaska. When it comes to market access, market needs aren't always able to be accommodated by a still young agricultural industry. The challenges of supply and demand sometimes prevent our growers from scaling up, given the relative uncertainty of markets. There's a lack of infrastructure on farms and in the state broadly, a lack of transportation to markets, a lack of access to more state lands suitable for agriculture, a lack of access to cheap power, a lack of processing, manufacturing, and production facilities. And lastly, a real demand for skilled agricultural workforce. Where will our next generation of farmers and laborers come from, as many of our current farmers are aging out? The key challenges for Alaska, or for agriculture in Alaska, often seem like the proverbial chicken and egg dilemma. What can we as Alaskans do differently now? Where can the state best be a catalyst for dynamic, meaningful change within our agriculture sector? Senate Bill 211 considers structure already found in existing statutes and builds on three major components that have been championed and prioritized by stakeholders and task forces in more recent years. Those three major components form the acronym CROP. C for capital access, R for revenue protection, and the O and P, open procurement. Again, based upon recommendations by task forces, division experts, and stakeholder policy priorities, these components were selected for their ability to get direct support to the industry quickly with minimal new staff and no additional programs to develop. Capital access, the C in CROP. The Board of Agriculture and Conservation is responsible for management of the Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund, ARLF, which is a key source of capital for farmers and producers. Senate Bill 211 seeks to be responsive to the evolving agriculture industry needs. The board is comprised of a working citizen board. All 7 seats are currently filled, but it is difficult at times to meet the 5-person quorum statutory requirement. This can unnecessarily delay action on loan applications and approvals. Statutorily reducing the quorum from 5 to 4 members will help increase efficiency of the board. With respect to expanding activities eligible for ARLF loans, the bill will add shipping or transportation as an eligible activity to qualify for an ARLF loan as recommended by recent task forces. The intent is to pave way for new agricultural-focused transportation cooperatives that will help reduce shipping costs into and around Alaska. The bill will also allow refinancing of ARLF and other loans, assuming applicants and activities are ARLF eligible. A $2 million capitalization infusion to ARLF will be the first injection of money to the fund since 1986. It will boost available capital to lend by almost 20%. The reason for the infusion is to ensure that ARLF has the resources to meet what we think will be additional demand due to the bill's attractive provisions. The bill also seeks to revise loan caps currently set in statute that are difficult to update over time to keep pace with inflation. I'd like to point out that due to inflation, $100 nearly 4 decades ago is roughly equivalent of $300 in today's economy. Currently, the current loan cap maximum is $1 million in total loans to any one borrower. Provisions in Section 3 of the bill would direct the Board of Agriculture and Conservation to set new loan limits and ceilings in regulation. This will require a thorough public process, including notice and public input. The data points on this slide are of interest. There are currently 52 active ARLF loans. The chart on the right gives insight into what types of activities ARLF is currently loaning money for, and the relative dollar amount of loans in each category. The takeaway is agriculture in Alaska is diverse, and ARLF's loan portfolio reflects that. I'd like to note that the total principal of the ARLF is what would be your balance plus authorized, which would be $21.4 million. Revenue protection, the R in crop. The concept of state funding premiums for federal crop insurance already exists in statute, AS 0313. Although it was never funded, the bill revises the support formula. The fiscal note includes capital money to pay for state support. $2 million will support crop insurance premiums for current acres under production and allow for additional acres in the program. The intent of the state-financed revenue protection is to incentivize production to boost locally grown feed supply and support larger livestock herds on the Alaska landscape. This helps offset risk and enables, particularly new farmers, to invest more in agricultural infrastructure and an expansion of production. At current production and 2023 premium levels, the 5-year cost of the program is approximately $900,000. Should participation in the program grow as desired, which would mean more acres under production, additional capital can be provided for premium support. Alaska Farm Bureau, the task force reports have indicated that state support for insurance would help move the needle. Access to revenue protection policies will help increase access to capital and lower a farmer's risk while improving equipment like irrigation systems that boost production. The proposed legislation focuses on barley, wheat, and oats because those are foundational crops that the state's livestock food chain depend upon. More secure livestock feed should enable greater herd sizes, which in turn improves throughput at slaughterhouses, improving the economics of those operations. The federal crop insurance revenue protection is important because it covers both price and yield risks and could in the future be required for feed grain crops in order for ARLF loan eligibility. So how this all works, and more of these details will be fleshed out in regulations. There's likely no minimum on acreages that could be covered, pending the USDA's risk management agency's requirements. What's envisioned within this statute is that in years one and two, the state would cover 100% of the premium in order for farmers to obtain 85% revenue protection. In years 3, 4, and 5, those requirements of the state step down. In year 3, the state would cover 100% of the premium sufficient to obtain 80% revenue protection. If a farmer wanted to acquire the additional 5%, they are able to. In year 4, the state covers the premium that would acquire 75% revenue protection. Again, a farmer or producer could purchase the remaining 10% to get you to 85% coverage. In year 5 and beyond, the farmer would first need to obtain 55% revenue protection. The state would cover the additional 15% to get to 70% revenue protection. That is a national average. I do want to just make one comment from a previous conversation that I had with Senator Dunbar. The federal government does contribute within these their federal crop insurance programs. They subsidize a portion of the premiums. A general accounting office report analyzed and looked at what the federal subsidy would have been in 2022, and they cover approximately 62% of what the premium would be if they were not involved. And so within this program, you would have the federal subsidy covering approximately 62%. The state would cover the remainder of the subsidy to attain these revenue protections. So how will this work? The USDA's risk management agency has what are called approved insurance providers, or AIPs, and there are about 14 of them nationwide. The AIPs offer policies based upon risk management agency set terms. The state of Alaska will essentially be functioning as an enrollment capacity. The state will be verifying by conducting site visits that Farmer X is in fact growing Y number of acres of Z crop and will pay the state's portion of the federal crop insurance as calculated by RMA. Note, the state is not getting into the insurance business. Open procurement, the ONP of crop. Procurement preferences already exist in statute. The preferences apply to state agencies, school districts, and municipalities that receive state funds. What type of procurements would have preferences? Agricultural products grown in the state and fishery products harvested or processed in waters in which the state has jurisdiction. Some protections are included within this legislation. When responding to a solicitation, sellers of eligible products must provide their current wholesale pricing lists. Debarment or civil penalties are possible for submitting inaccurate price information. Additionally, an annual report to the legislature with specific data requirements will be directed. Other than fishery products, currently the number of Alaska producers with the ability to provide quantities these institutional buyers require is small. This is why increased spending isn't necessarily expected to be a significant issue. We know that there is more work to be done on potentially even more effective ways to connect growers and buyers, and the division will keep working on those. However, this is a step that we could take now. Task forces, the Farm Bureau, and others have all recommended more work on getting retailers to offer more Alaska-grown products. Greater access to more local markets helps create more opportunity for producers to scale up and increase our local food security and independence. I believe that was the extent of what we were hoping to go today, Chair Bjorkman, and I'm happy to answer any questions of you or committee members.
Thank you very much for that presentation, Mr. Goodrum. Are there any questions from committee members? Also available for questions is Brian Scorby. Is he here?
Director of the Division of Agriculture.
He is also available for questions if members have questions for Mr. Scorby. Seeing and hearing none, I will open public testimony, this time on the Crop Act, Senate Bill 211. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify? Is there anyone online who wishes to testify to Senate Bill 211? I will close public testimony. Further questions for Mr. Goodrum or anyone else? Seeing and hearing none, we will set aside Senate Bill 211 for further consideration. The Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again on Monday, March 4th, which, by the way, is the only date to the calendar that can be given as a command. I'm not sure if you guys knew that. When we will hear Senate Bill 154, Bidder Preference Military Career Skills Program, Senate Bill 102, Refuse Utility Regulations. We had noticed that we would hear Senate Bill 44 regarding naturopathy. However, that item has been removed from our calendar and replaced by Senate Bill 257, Electric Utility Regulation. As there is no further business to come before this committee, we are adjourned at 3:18 p.m.